The Offside Rule, We Get It, is brought to you by Continental Tires.
Hello, this is episode 31 of the Offside Rule, We Get It podcast, brought to you by Continental Tires, getting you to the game safely. And I'm joined by our two regulars, Hayley McQueen.
Hi there, everyone.
And Kate Borsay, plus half.
I bought my son Arthur today, so I'm just basically feeding him throughout the whole podcast to keep him happy. So if you hear some munching in the background, it is a one-year-old trying to be kept quiet.
Do you have anything to say, Arthur, on the cake? Oh, that was the cutest thing. You didn't see, but he actually went to talk to the microphone, but just no noise came out. Thank you very much for joining us. We will go through three topics today, ladies, as we always do. But we're going to start with where to next, looking ahead to the summer already. We're hearing rumours that Ranieri could possibly go to Italy. What will Leicester fans make of that? Conte possibly going to Chelsea. We've heard about Karanka from Middlesbrough. What have you made of that, just walking out?
I know. I think it's just one of those awkward situations. You thought Friday, right, that's it, he's gone. And then he's like had a bit of time, slept on it, Saturday. And then very vocal with the fans, of course, in the game. They lost a chance. Steve Agnew took charge. Had they have won when he started Rhodes and Downing, which one of the key talking points from the fans off the back of the Rotherham defeat, I think the situation might be different. But it's like, oh, we've actually lost and we still don't have him. Now what are we going to do? So I think talks will continue and we'll just have to see. But he's a fiery Spaniard and I think he's been spending too much time with Jose Mourinho. I think that's his problem.
But there's no way he's going to go back, right? I mean, surely the damage has been done.
I thought that, but I'm not too sure.
Well, with everything up in the air, it means that we can just speculate. We can just imagine exactly what we want will happen this summer. And what I'm ideally looking for is a few links. So if someone's going out, who's coming in their place, that sort of thing. We're also going to talk handbags. Oh, wow, what a week it's been. 7 days of different tussles. You've got the Karanka walking out at Middlesbrough and player dispute there. Also, Diego Costa and Gareth Barry, did he or didn't he bite him? Gareth Barry says no, that wasn't the case. It did look like he went to have a bit of a nibble though, didn't it?
Costa's just such a controversial character, isn't he? He basically just walks into it. He cannot help himself.
We will also then round things off by small print, looking at the small print in contracts, release clause. Because as you can tell over the years, there have been so many famous cases of release clauses that people weren't aware of. I was actually on the way here to Hayley's, where we're recording today, listening to the fact that some players, if they play over a certain amount of minutes for clubs, they have to pay the old club quite a lot of money, which is why some players at this point in the season are not being used as much as you'd think they would be, certainly in the Championship. So it's just little things that we need to look out for. So let's get our teeth, seeing as we're talking about biting, into those topics.
Hi, I'm Jeff Stelling and you're listening to The Offside Rule. Three women talking about football. I'm used to listening to four old women talking about football on Saturday afternoons, so I'll definitely prefer this.
Well, where to next is what we're going to begin with. But I wanted to start just a quick reflection on the quarterfinals of the FA Cup. First of all, Manchester United, West Ham, really nicely poised now.
I can't see United getting through this one, to be honest, really. That's, again, what I thought actually about Watford and Arsenal, though. And look what happened there. I was sat working at Sky and I had an Arsenal fan as a director and a Watford fan as a presenter, a Watford fan as a producer, and then I had an Arsenal cameraman. So it was, it was almost handbags in the studio.
Mm. I think, should West Ham get past United, I think they'll go on to win the whole thing, I really do. But I've heard a few people saying that they're feeling positive things about Everton.
Yeah, I think so. Just going back to the West Ham game, that wonderful touch of class from Payet, absolutely brilliant. And Van Gaal afterwards saying that that was the perfect tonic to a nasty week. He actually called it a nasty week after the West Brom and the Liverpool game. So, but actually I have to say, fair dues to Manchester United for getting themselves back in it.
A final mention as well for Crystal Palace. I was at that game at Reading and Alan Pardew, when he came in, you could see the relief on his face. I think it's the same for Martinez, actually. Both of those managers wanting a really good run in the FA Cup to distract away from some poorer form in the league.
Yeah, it's definitely a lifeline for Martinez. We were having a bit of a discussion before, weren't we, saying, gosh, with the managerial talk of who's going where, when Martinez leaves Everton, it's not if, it's a case of when. He's kind of on his last legs. This has given him a lifeline, but perhaps if he's to go on and maybe get to a final, he can kind of go out on a little bit of a high, having achieved that, but just, again, underachieving for Everton in the league.
Well, let's go to our first topic, where to next? Seeming as we've already started on that, talking about Martinez, he might actually pop up in some of your answers. Let's look for a chain of events. Who's going to go where? and how. I'm going to book the trend. I'm going to start with Kate.
If you can hear Arthur in the background, by the way, in case you've just tuned in and are wondering what these little squeals are, Arthur's doing his best to knock Hayley's TV off its stand behind us. Hopefully he won't. So I'm going to pick up on Martinez because he comes into the equation when I say that Kike Flores, outstanding season for Watford. I know last week, Lindsay, you were saying that you're a massive fan of what he's done at the club in terms of how he's organised the club, how the players are playing for him, and they are a united force. A lot of people's favourites to go down at the beginning of the season. They're doing incredibly well. So if Martinez goes, and we think he probably will go from Everton because their league form just not good enough, regardless of what happens in the FA Cup, if Martinez goes, that leaves a hole at Everton, in which case Kike Flores could well leave Watford for the bigger challenge of what many would argue is a bigger club at Everton. What Martinez failed at, perhaps Flores could well succeed at. And I'm surprised for Martinez, actually, and I think it's a really unfortunate time for him, because if he does leave the club, then where's he going to go? Where's his outlet? Is he going to go abroad for a bit, maybe? Do we see him going to somewhere like Valencia if Neville doesn't turn it around? Who knows? So Kike Flores to Everton. Then there's a gap at Watford. Karanka, I don't think he's going back to Middlesbrough, so I think he's going to go to Watford instead so that he gets his cast iron chance of managing in the Premier League. That leaves a hole in Middlesbrough's managerial office. So Nigel Pearson, I'm going to bring him back from sticking his head in the sand like all those ostriches and rejuvenate Pearson, sending him to Middlesbrough.
Hayley, let's see how much of a link you've got.
Okay, I'm kind of with you on a few of those there, but we have the situation with Mourinho, who could potentially go to Manchester United and actually maybe take Aitor Karanka with him. You could say it's a step down to go into kind of an assistant managing role or a coaching role, but it's managing or being involved in one of the best leagues in the world. And if Middlesbrough don't get promoted and Karanka doesn't stay with Middlesbrough, it might be his chance to just kind of take a little bit of a step back and learn from Mourinho yet again in a league that they're now both quite familiar with.
Well, look, Steve McLaren did it, and look where he is.
Kate, speaking of which, Steve McLaren, where can we see him going next? Goodness me. Well, you've also got the situation right now with Paris Saint-Germain, and Laurent Blanc, of course, played for Manchester United. Could he be going into United and maybe not even Jose Mourinho at all? Because Mourinho is a failed manager at Chelsea of late. Laurent Blanc has just won Paris Saint-Germain their fourth consecutive league title, two Ligue 1 championship since he took over, of course, and maybe he will take Ibrahimovic with him. And Ibra came out after the game having scored four goals and a 9-0 win over Troyes and said, unless they want to replace the Eiffel Tower with me, I will be leaving at the end of the season. So there could be a bit of a roundabout of not just a manager leaving in Van Gaal, who could potentially then go to somewhere, I don't know, like Paris Saint-Germain. I can't see Louis Van Gaal wanting to stay in the Premier League with the way that the media are with him. He just doesn't like it at all, does he? If he can't cut it at Manchester United, I don't think it's going to work for him elsewhere, and I can't see him stepping down. He's going to leave altogether. You have Blanc coming in, you have Ibrahimovic going there. Boom, job done.
The thing with Blanc, though, is that I just don't think he cut it in the Premier League. He's used to a one-horse race, and as we've seen this season, the Premier League is wide open. It could even be a six-horse race next season. Blanc's not going to be liking those odds.
It would have been really easy for him to coast through this season, knowing that his team have got what it takes. But interestingly enough, when you listen to his press conferences, he's not afraid of shaking the team up. If they've had perhaps not such a convincing win, i.e. they haven't won by five clear goals, then he isn't afraid to lay it into his team.
The chain of events that I see unfolding, one of them seems like it's going to happen. It seems like it's a dead cert. Is Conte to Chelsea. So if that happens, I think Ranieri will fill his shoes at Italy, leaving a vacancy at Leicester. And what I believe will happen is I believe Newcastle United, despite Benitez's efforts, will go down. That release clause will be summoned. So I think Benitez will be out of Newcastle. He'll go to Leicester and David Moyes will fill in at Newcastle. So I'm giving you four, actually.
Yeah, interesting one. I mean, I just think whoever goes to Newcastle, it's like walking into a lion's den. I'm very impressed that they've managed to attract Benitez.
Well, I mean, you look at the managers that are currently available at the moment. I found a great site, Transfer Market, which has helped me with this. And you can obviously narrow it down to nationalities. But just looking at the sort of big names out there at the moment, you've still got Pepe Mel, who's out of a job at the moment, maybe not the biggest name in the world, but he's amongst there as a name that is sometimes linked with coming back here, maybe like for a championship side. I'm not talking Premier League. You've got Steve McClaren, who's still out of work. Obviously, Jose Mourinho. James Beattie, having left Swansea, of course, he's never found himself another job from there. David Moyes on that list, as well as Tim Sherwood.
Let's not forget as well, if we're talking summer and we're talking merry-go-rounds, what happens this summer? The Euros. What's likely to happen? England not doing that great. Hodgson out. Who comes in for him?
Also on the list as well, Paolo Di Canio, since leaving Sunderland, just disappeared. And Clarence Seedorf as well, of course, forgetting that he tried his hand at management, didn't quite work. And and he's on this great list there. So maybe we'll dip back into this at some point and look at all the great British managers towards the end of the season who are out of work that we can have in England, because so many foreign managers at the moment. And if Rafa obviously stays at Newcastle and they stay up, if Ito Karanka stays at Middlesbrough, which I don't think is going to happen, and they get promoted, you've got two former Real Madrid links there and two Spaniards managing two of the greatest teams in the northeast of England.
Follow us on Twitter at Offside Rule Pod and like our page on Facebook. Simply type in the Offside Rule We Get In. There's only one of us.
I think I can speak for us all when I say we're all partial to a nice handbag. But how about handbags between footballers and between managers and footballers? It's happened so many times, but the last 7 days in particular have brought it back to the forefront. We've talked about Karanka walking out at Borough, also Costa and Barry squaring up. Looked like they sort of made up afterwards, though. I want some proper fallouts, ones that we may have forgotten over the years, starting with Hayley.
It's one you might not know about, but Andy Cole and Teddy Sheringham hate each other. It's more a case of Andy Cole really disliking Teddy Sheringham. And they apparently never spoke a word to each other when they were at Manchester United. Nothing. And it all stems back to an incident in February 1998. So Sheringham apparently blamed Andy Cole when Bolton scored past them. And he said the rivalry began back on England duty back in 1995, and it boiled over to then. He'd said it was his fault in 1998. And then he'd said it actually went back from 95, because when he signed for Manchester United and it was his England debut against Uruguay, he said he'd come on for Teddy Sheringham. And of course, you know, teammates for United, teammates within England, you'd think they'd all get on, and playing for the same club team would help with the country. But he said he walked onto the pitch. There was 70,000 people out there watching him. He said he was really nervous but really proud to play for his country. It was a great moment. He'd been relishing it. He said, and when Teddy Sheringham came off, he didn't extend his hands to give him a handshake. He didn't look at him. He didn't say good luck. Just walked straight past him. He said he went to put his hand out and got completely snubbed. And he said, I didn't really know the bloke. I didn't know that he had any issues with me. Obviously, things have happened where he has said things about him after that. From that on, they've never spoken. Even to this day now, they don't even speak. There's former players, things that these players go to. And as long as they're not there together, then everything's fine, which is a bit of a weird one, isn't it?
It is, for it to extend so far and also beyond and outside the game. You know, certain players are known for not getting on the pitch, but most players are man enough to just deal with it off the pitch.
Isn't it amazing, though, how you have these two players who didn't speak and didn't communicate off the pitch, yet seem to play and communicate so well on the pitch, and had a really great partnership and had a great thing going on at the time, and of course won the treble when actually all things weren't great in the camp.
That's a good one, because I think many people wouldn't know that. I don't think many people remember there being friction there. I'm going to go with actual handbags. And it wasn't a very popular story at the time, certainly for anyone related to Southampton Football Club or to either of the players. But do you remember Bradley Wright Phillips and Nathan Dyer, very young, in their early 20s, getting caught on CCTV, rifling through a barmaid's handbag? It was in a nightclub, made press at the time. Ian Wright was absolutely outraged about it. And it was actually going through handbags that caused it. So I thought I'd use that as a literal example.
I don't think Bradley Wright Phillips really recovered from it. That's really tainted. I know he never reached quite the dizzying heights of his brother in his football career, but that really tainted him, actually.
What have you got?
Well, I'm going to go for the man of the moment, Louis van Gaal, because when we're talking about bust-ups, Louis van Gaal gives us a whole handbook full of them. But I've picked out a few of my favourites here, and particularly during his time at Bayern. Luca Toni was a player who didn't really win the respect of Louis van Gaal. He was a 2006 World Cup winner, 3 years later in the Bayern Munich side, and, you know, believing that he should be getting plaudits for what he'd achieved, wanting to be treated in a superstar way, not an overly totally superstar way, by the way. He didn't come in with a huge ego, but he got on the wrong side of Louis van Gaal, who had no problem in asserting his authority. So during a training camp, when Luca Toni was slouched in a chair, because he's quite a tall guy, Louis van Gaal went up to him and pulled his ears to make him sit up straight. So that's the kind of demeaning sort of silent aggression that van Gaal liked to employ. And that wasn't the first incident for Louis van Gaal. In fact, he had no problem showing his team that he had the balls to make any kind of decision that he wanted to. And he did this in the perfect way possible by dropping his pants in front of the whole team to show that he had the balls. Here's another incident. In October 2010, van Gaal invited Karl-Heinz Rummenigge and Uli Hoeneß, two gods, basically, at Bayern Munich to the launch of his new book in a Munich hotel. Now, at that time, Bayern Munich weren't doing particularly well. So for Louis van Gaal to be celebrating a book launch might have rubbed a few people up the wrong way. Bayern were 13 points at that time from the top of the league and I think experiencing one of their worst starts to the season ever. So during this book launch, van Gaal walked up to Rummenigge and Hoeneß and said, here, have this copy. You can learn from it and you should read it. Which, of course, delighted the two senior men at Bayern Munich. So, yeah, he had no problem at all in asserting his authority. And, yeah, huge balls.
One more for you. Nicky Barmby and Jimmy Bullard. They had a big bust up. They'd been hammered by Everton. This is when Hull were ordered to train on a park the next day. Tensions had boiled over when they were training in this park the next day between Barmby and Bullard, which I don't think ordinarily would have made news because there's training bust-ups all the time, aren't there? Apart from on this particular occasion, it actually occurred in front of members of the local Women's Institute who were watching on.
Flippin' heck. When we talk of the hairdryer treatment, you think of Sir Alex Ferguson, but talking of hairstyles that cause you to be dropped from the national team, this is something that happened, and it was a bust-up between Redondo and his manager, Passarella. So basically, Fernando Redondo's exclusion from the Argentina squad was down to his refusal to get his hair cut. His manager, Daniel Passarella, had basically said he wanted to clean up the way that the team looked. He wanted him to look respectable and that they were a national team and they had to be unified. And he told him to get a short back and sides during the 1994 World Cup. And he basically said no. That's it. Absolutely not. So they had a huge bust up, fell out, and he never played under him ever again.
Can you imagine if Barry Venison was told to do that? He would never have become the style icon that he is today.
What about these moments of madness that we see with we've had the Suarez bite, we had the Diego Costa, wasn't it a bite? Barry says it wasn't. Costa just, what was it, just a snog on the neck? Who knows? These two players definitely weren't snogging, and it was all down to a moment of madness, said Lee Bowyer, when he had that on-the-field fight with his actual teammate. They were at each other's throats. They had to be ripped apart at Newcastle under Graham Souness. This is one of the hardest guys in football. You can imagine two teammates fighting on the pitch, and you know you've got Graham Souness to deal with after that. Goodness me. But yeah, they were beaten by Aston Villa. Both the players were sent off, and it was one of those, had you been listening to radio commentary, oh, a bust-up between players on the pitch. Never in a million years would you have thought that they were down to actually two teammates fighting with each other. They said they are actually still friends. It was a temporary fallout. It was all to do with the fact that they were not in a great position in the league. They were losing to Aston Villa. And, it just all got a little bit too heated. He said, I'm sure if we'd been winning 3-0, it would never have happened. So when emotions are really fraught, you can actually just punch your teammate in the neck and that happens. You don't really see much of that happening now, though, do you? That's kind of old school.
Did your dad ever get involved in any fights?
I don't think so. I know he was a bit of a hard nut. I do know when Gary Bailey was goalkeeper at Manchester United, apparently he used to kind of like giving his opinions and he thought he was quite special. And many years later, I found out that actually a lot of the players didn't really like him, but he was intelligent. He was into his photography and his art, and those, most of them at Man United at that time were just working class lads loving playing football. They weren't flash Harrys. Not showing off with his clothes and material things, but about his intelligence. And I think he stood up and tried to kind of assert this authority onto the rest of his teammates. And my dad headbutted him. But I didn't know this, obviously, at the time. I probably wasn't born. But years later, I found this out.
through Gary Bailey. So he was like, pass on your regards to my dad. And he told me the story. I was like, flipping heck.
And for those of you wondering, it did pass down to Hayley McQueen. You ought to see some of the strops before we record podcasts. Oh, yeah, and you've got a good headbutt on you, haven't you? Yeah.
Absolutely. Scottish kiss, or Glasgow kiss, as we call it. Yeah.
It isn't the headbutt. It's the nails. They're so sharp.
The female take on football.
Finally, we're going to talk release clauses, checking the small print, something I need to do more. I think this is the sole purpose of football agents, because otherwise footballers probably wouldn't check these things. But over the years, it's not just footballers, it's managers that have had them in. As we know, Rafa Benitez, there's a release clause that says that if Newcastle get relegated, he's out. Of course, Rafa saying, I don't want to manage in the Championship. What are you on about? And this is another thing, is I don't think Brendan Rodgers, even though he's out of work, would go to a club that was in the Championship, would he? He only wants to be in the top flight, do you think? I can't see him doing that.
I'd actually forgotten bizarrely about Brendan Rodgers being out of work. And I hadn't really factored him into my managerial moves. But yeah, it is a good point.
Anyway, back to topic. What are we going to do in terms of release clauses? What have we found that has raised an eyebrow or two? Some of them you cannot believe. Is this actually true? I think at the same time as saying these, we should say, do we actually believe them?
This is one of the tastier clauses. And it's just weird. Whether it's true or not, who knows? But I'm gonna tell you it anyway, because of course what we find on the internet is obviously always true. So former Cardiff owner Sam Hammam signed Spencer Pryor from Manchester City. And as part of a sort of an initiation of types, maybe not necessarily something that was written into his contract, but something he had to do before a contract was written and signed, he had to eat a Lebanese delicacy. The delicacy being sheep's testicle. That's right. Spencer Pryor actually went through with this and thought, well, I want to make my move. I want to go and sign for the club. Cooked it with lemon and parsley and ate the lot.
Do you know what? Something definitely happened, because that story was so widely reported at the time. But I heard that it might have actually been chicken. It might have been a bit of a test of his mettle. He didn't actually make him eat a testicle.
Artie's just coughing now. Ugh, this just sounds awful, doesn't it? That was a yes, it does.
Stefan Schwartz, Swedish footballer. I thought this was really an obscure thing to have in a contract, because he signed for Sunderland. This was back in 1999, before all of the space talk that we've had recently with Mr. Peak being in space, Tim Peak. Apparently, back then, he was considering signing up for one of the very first commercial flights into space. So when Sunderland signed him, they're like, actually, you can sign for us, but we're going to put a clause in saying that you can't go to space until the end of the contract.
It was a really funny one, that one, because Sunderland got this tip-off and thought, right, well, if he thinks he's going to go into space in 2002, we better put something in his contract. Needless to say, I think he played for about 5 years at Sunderland and retired, and as far as I know, still hasn't managed to make it up into space. I've got another one here for you. German striker Giuseppe Reyna, he signed for German side Arminia Bielefeld in 96 under the condition, again, this is a bit of an internet special, that they build him a house for every year of his contract, so says The Guardian. Sadly, he didn't negotiate the size of the house, which meant that he could have been presented with, I don't know, a little doll's house, a little Lego house, a little paper house, and it still would have fulfilled the terms of his contract.
Funny how he was trying to be clever, and actually he's like, no, the club and their lawyers are always going to be more clever than you, young man. Yes, so well done. Okay, so it seems slightly fitting after the weekend and the Costa incident. This is one I think we all had, didn't we? With Luis Suarez, who made his name as a bit of a vampire in the Premier League, numerous biting incidents that he was involved with. Barcelona apparently had a clause in his contract that says he wasn't allowed to bite another player.
Well, I don't know whether there's a genuine bite clause. I guess that to protect themselves, it's not just the biting. There were other incidents too, that like every contract, there would be a bad behaviour clause.
Speaking of bad behaviour, little Arthur's on very best behaviour. He's just having a great time.
I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to Instagram a picture of what Arthur's done to Hayley's front room, and then you'll get an image to look at whilst you listen to this podcast.
And what we have to say is there's occasions when there's a mother in the group as well, where we're recording and you have to bring along Arthur. Yeah. If you want a podcast every week, this has to happen. So just to let you know. Neymar, I'm going to just tell you a clause that I think I would have if I was a footballer, because I love it and I would definitely include you two in it. apparently when he went to Barcelona in 2013, part of his conditions, and there were so many of them, of course, lots of it included lots of cash, but he also had a clause that allowed his friends from Brazil to visit every 2 months, all expenses paid by Barcelona. I would do this. If I go off, girls, and do podcasting heaven in the Bahamas or something, I'm going to have that clause in, ship you two out, all expenses paid every 2 months. Maybe we'll leave Arthur with a nanny.
I've got one that I think is pretty stupid. What would you take a job whereby you could be sacked at any time the club was less than 3 points above the relegation zone after the eighth day of the season? Because sometimes clubs yo-yo, right? Sometimes fixtures could perhaps not go your way. But yeah, Eugene Hack, he was manager of Bundesliga 2 side, Aachen, in 99, and he had that clause in his contract, which I think is pretty risky.
Mm. I love a bit of irony as well, so I will share this one with you. Dennis Bergkamp, known as the what Dutchman?
The flying.
Yeah, the flying Dutchman. Well, it should be the non-flying Dutchman, because if it's to be believed, he had a clause saying that he would not fly. He was scared of flying. Oh. So the flying Dutchman is actually not a flying Dutchman. I don't know whether that's true or not, because I imagine they had to fly to get to certain fixtures. He would have had to have gone in an aircraft.
I don't think he actually just didn't go to those fixtures, or he took a boat. But if he couldn't easily take a boat, he didn't go to those fixtures.
I'm sorry, we've got 3 games in 7 days, but Dennis Bergkamp will only be there for one because he's going to be on a boat for the other 6 days getting back. Thank you very much for this week, girls. Thank you, Arthur. Now you're quiet. Brilliant. We will be back next time with episode 32 of The Offside Rule We Get It, brought to you by Continental Tyres, getting you to the game safely.
Yes! Oh, yes! The Offside Rule We Get It is brought to you by Continental Tyres.